Hey, welcome back. Join me for a new series I'm doing on memoirs of poets who have answered my submissions call for their thoughts and works. I wish I understood the technology of Podbean better so that I could capture their voices. But at least you can hear their words come alive when read out loud by your humble host of Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul. Let's begin this series with Walter Bargan, Missouri's first poet laureate. You may recall I have read some of his poems in earlier podcasts, such as the one I did on grief and Alzheimer's, called Grief, Fire, and Ice. Because my mother suffered and died from Alzheimer's, as did his. In that episode, I read from his poetry collection, My Other Mother's Red Mercedes. I also read from his trilogy, The Body of Water, Poetry by Walter Bargan, in my episode Water the Sacral Way. These are just two episodes on which I have included his work. Walter Bargan has published 24 books of poetry. Recent books include Days Like This Are Necessary, New and Selected Poems, Trouble Behind, Glass Doors, Perishable Kingdoms, Too Quick for the Living, My Other Mother's Red Mercedes, Until Next Time, and his most recent is Pole Dancing in the Nightclub of God, published this year by Red Mountain Press. Some of his awards include a National Endowment of the Arts Fellowship, Quarter After Eight Prose Prize, the Hanks Prize, the Chester H. Jones Foundation Prize, and the William Rockhill Nelson Award. Many others, I've listed them at the end of this podcast in the episode description. His poems, essays, and stories have appeared in over 300 magazines, including American Literary Review, American Letters and Commentary, Beloit Poetry Journal, Denver Quarterly, Georgia Review, and several others. He makes regular appearances on local shows such as Pepper and Friends and Radio Friends with Paul Pepper, and I recommend you tune in for his entertaining storytelling narratives. I'll put some links to these programs, as well as the book titles and so on that I have read off in the episode description. As you will see in the poems today, Bargan is, in fact, a poet of life stories. His memories rush forth in streams of vivid imagery that carry the human condition into awareness. In fact, Bargan states that creativity happens, quote, where imagination and memory collide with events, end of quote. Bargan's mother was German and his father an American. Born in the U.S. in 1948, he was fortunately able to visit Germany after growing up and recalls playing in the ruins of Mannheim, Heidelberg in the 1950s. Mannheim is across the Rhine from Ludwigshafen and is downstream along the Neckar, a tributary of the Rhine, from Heidelberg. These places are the setting for this first poem I'm going to read that's called Lost Ordnance, which shows an innocent young boy digging into a truth about World War II. And indeed, Bargan said that this war inspired his poetry writing in the 60s when he wrote poems after clocking out of his day job as a construction foreman in Missouri. Lost Ordnance. The first shovelful, alive and rich. I'm down on my knees, breaking clods with my hands, cool and smeared across my palms, clouding my fingernails, a damp earth that knows its time. Standing again, I drive the shovel's blade with a boot, hit something hard, a muffled ring. It happens a second time. I begin carefully to dig, remembering the mid-river sandbar one dry spring on the Neckar a few years after the war. Staring into rippled shocks of light, I saw the black outline of a machine gun exposed by the retreating water. Too young, I couldn't swim the current to save it. Those summers outside Heidelberg, in the many feet thick fortifications overgrown by sapling pines, it was there I played my death over and over. At one jagged blown hole or another, on top of the parapet or in an empty gun emplacement, my cheek finding the carpet of moss and somehow my body jumping up to rehearse the charge again. It didn't matter which side I was on. The dying was so easy. Around the perimeter, I dug spent shell casings that had hardly aged, arranging their calibers along bullet-riddled concrete ledges. I'd toss their dirt-packed shiny brass into the air, the filth of battle dusting my clothes. Not far off the groomed hills, where one slope bowed into another, as if they really did go on beyond the entrance of white columns, the fluted marble pillared against a roof of engraved sky, where words fell one letter at a time on upturned eyes. The surrounding flags streaked their colors through wind, reminders of where once they left and then arrived across all those fields flowing with white crosses, stars, and crescents, as if the most important things we do are done over and over. Holding my father's hand, walking the perfect rows, looking for no one name among the many, he was surprised not to find his own battle-weary orders to hold his position fading. On weekends, I'd see through the rain-flecked back window, fields of bomb craters turned upside down in streaming lenses of rain. Still, the craters filled with water, working themselves into weed-choked ponds where frogs exploded into a new season. Through Weinheim and Löwenschaffen, couples in shorts and sandals strolled arm in arm, behind baby carriages and dogs straining leashes, as if it were normal to pass buildings with just one wall standing, rooms crowded with sky, under eaves with corners gouged out, stone and brick scribbled with the graffiti of shrapnel. I work the shovel slowly now, an ocean, a continent of time away, feeling for the hidden edges, wanting to loosen without jarring, knowing of grenades, lost ordnance that missed their wars, their seeds slow to detonate in others' gardens and backyards where other children play at the dead center of day. Published in his book, Days Like This Are Necessary, New and Selected Poems, Walter Bargan. This next poem by Walter Bargan is from his volume by the same title, Trouble Behind Glass Doors. According to the book description, this work of Bargan's, quote, details rewards, challenges, and disappointments of life, especially in Missouri and the Midwest, as well as meditations on Midwestern nature and geography, and on the ironies of the poet's, Bargan's, place in contemporary culture, end of quote. And Bargan says, quote, the title, Trouble Behind Glass Doors, says it all. The ways that we fail ourselves, each other, sustaining ourselves on the earth, are there for all of us to see, read, if we will just open up our eyes and minds. I hope the pains of these poems are clear enough for us to see through, end of quote. trouble behind glass doors. The house gone a decade. We drove past once or twice a year. We wondered who lived there. What happened? Where did they go? Though it was us we wondered about. The windows cracked and broken. Socketed shadows stared at the dust rising over our leaving. The porch settled, sagged, its weathered floor sinking. Thin wooden columns hanging from the roof, the world less than solid, nailed to this sky as it hurtled into rot and space. The porch swung from one chain spilling, nights where the humid air was monumental. The other chain snagged on a sickle moon. Trumpet vines once brushed the backs of our necks at the zenith of the creaking arc. A shroud of honeysuckle entangled the trellis, fattened the air with its fragrance. Before the final raising, there was no sense of modesty left. Nothing, hidden or secreted. All was loss and lost. Simply waiting to tumble from the open, unclosable front door. Inside, walls were covered by neglect. We were repulsed, drawn in by a disheartening curiosity. The crumbling plaster sifted down from the ceiling onto the floor, warping deeper. Mouse-shredded carpet littered the corners. In the kitchen, no trace of the scorpion that once crawled from under a cabinet. No trace of the pot-bellied stove that consumed whole trees and kept no one warm. Face high on the north bedroom wall, the fist-sized hole was busy with the comings and goings of wasps. 40 years found, bookmarked, the handmade envelope, yellowed as evening stretched to its breaking point, a late light that catches clouds of August, insects rising over the glowing shadows of unmown fields. One corner of the tape that sealed the letter is folded over. Frail but sticky, it clings to the page of a book that reads, "The question is not, do we believe in God? But rather, does God believe in us?" Creased once, opening brittle as wings left on the sill between storm windows, the purse-edged paper bears lines fine enough to have been brushed with a single camel hair. Bearing words so delicate, they bend under the pressure of reading words that long to return to their own year. What's done? What's left to do? There's so much we didn't imagine. The letter can't be delivered. Can't be returned. There's an oak's shadow edging slowly past a quince bush where goats once foundered on afternoon visions of morning glory seeds. 40 years later, the letter ends. What is here is elsewhere. What is not here is everywhere. There is only one of us. There is nothing to deliver or take away. I have no dog-eared scrap of paper. The address is no more than 5th Street between Elm and Locust, the numbered streets running north-south, the trees east-west. The slope of the hill seems right, though I can't remember the sun streaking a single shadow across any space of that year. Perhaps the rooms had fallen into the silence of spiders. I must have lived in the shadows of those months, daily framed by longing and war and smaller wants. The attic stairs, railless and steep, as if the house needed a way to enter another dimension quickly, led up to a single room, whose walls, ceiling, roof were one and the same, and at either gable a small window painted shut. Standing in the middle of that room was to stand in the promise of a condemned house. Written in black on the dim east wall, only an unbeliever could have created our image of God, and only a false God could be satisfied. Why was I still there? We never leave the places we've lived. We construct and reconstruct our absences. The address of our disbeliefs written on the back of napkins lost at the bottom of pockets and purses. From Trouble Behind Glass Doors, Walter Bargan. I would like to add a poem or two to this podcast from his latest book, Pole Dancing and the Nightclub of God, published this year. I hope I can read these poems out loud without whooping belly laughs. Bargan brings the divine and mythological legends down into our mundane existence in hilarious prose poems organized into five books or chapters. Adam and Eve are hound dog philosophers. Adam is collared and unleashed by Eve, quote, so that he doesn't run off to the gods again, end of quote. There is a pandemic and heat-racked Gomorrah. Moses has a secret passion for pole dancing, and you get the idea. Okay, I'd like to read a couple. Give me a minute, get the book. One is from book one, Hound Dog Philosophers, page 29. Hound Dog Philosophers. Adam and Eve sit across from each other, arguing all night. Her sensations versus his rationality. Her Spinoza against his Hume. They laugh at Descartes in the next rickety wooden booth as he undresses himself, searching for something certain and absolute. He's already down to his holy t-shirt as he worries over the, quote, persistent vapors of melancholy, end of quote. Down into their empty glasses, no Taoist half-full, half-empty middle way. They're beyond that by years. Ralph Einstein walks into the bar, unleashing his frazzled mop from under a red do-rag, buys a round for the house, declares a toast to time, declares their worth is all in the passing, curved space, warped lives, all that they can see in this stale, smoky, strobing jukebox light. Adam begins fishing for pocket change, making lewd jokes about grounding their knowing as coins spill to the floor. Quarters flash across the table. They head for song machine salvation in a sequin-studded, hip-thrusting Elvis tune. Across the dance floor, they sweat beer into each other's arms. Naked Descartes shouts, "I'm surprised by how prone my mind is to error," as Elvis swallows another note from a heartbreaking universe. Okay, the next poem is from book two, which is called Mosaic. Book one is called Atomized. So Dinner Party from book two. Moses returns home from work an hour early. He hangs his jacket in the hall. Forlorn piles of hats on the shelf above the coat hooks have lost their heads forever. He slowly changes into a dirty denim work shirt and jeans. A doomed prisoner or just another hungover day, he trudges toward the utility room. He doesn't bother with the light switch. Instead, he holds a flashlight. He observes each bolt spaced equally around the edge of the steel plate as they furtively weep warm water. There is so much to cry about. On his knees, he picks up the wet rag and wrenches. Moses never knew that a water heater could feel so much. Lonely and coated with dust, hoping to assuage its leaky feelings, he invites the water heater to dinner. The water heater accepts and asks if he can bring a couple of friends. Around the heavy oak table, the water heaters listen to each other's stories. The yowling cat that was stuck between a 40-gallon steel body and the concrete wall, watching the once-a-month affair between the two plumbers making unnecessary repairs on each other. The circuit breaker with a short that sparks and sputters to the tune of Heartbreak Hotel. With the second bottle of Pinot Grigio emptied and the third just opened, the telephone starts ringing and the neighbors are calling to ask, "Have you seen our water heaters? Downstairs, there's nothing but gushing pipes." Moses wades into the hot water again. Okay, thank you, Walter Bargan, for allowing me to read from your memoirs. And now you may take your leave to feed your feral cats, rowdy raccoons, hummingbirds, cardinals, and mourning doves. Everyone, thank you for listening. I am taking ongoing submissions of poets' memoirs to this podcast. If you are interested, check out the link in the episode description. I'll see you next time on Poetry, the Memoir of the Soul.